Just a review of what we did yesterday. We had two Gemaras here. We had one Gemara of Rav Chisda, who says that after you eat basar, you're not allowed to eat gvina. The flip side, after you eat gvina, you're allowed to eat basar. With a discussion of Rav Acha bar Yosef. And this is all here on Daf Kufei Omen Aleph. And we spent quite a bit of time yesterday trying to figure out what was the question of Rav Acha bar Yosef to Rav Chisda, then what was his reply. And then we went on to the sugya of Mar Ukva and his father, whether you wait a full 24 hours, that was the father, and then the son would only wait until a sudachrita. What exactly is sudachrita? So this is gemaras that we've done in the past, but what we tried to do yesterday, we began, and we still have quite a ways to finish this project, is the Moreshes Moshe, who gives you a very fine overview of all the different shitos. Now, the focal point here is on Rav Acha bar Yosef's question to Rav Chisda, because it seems that Rav Acha bar Yosef understood on the one hand that you have to wait after you eat basa. You can't just eat gvina immediately. That part of Rav Chisda's statement he accepted, and he had no problems with that. But what he seems to be in doubt about, and he's confused about, is the concept of basa v'ena shinayim. And we mentioned yesterday, and that's what we want to pick it up today, the Yam Shel Shlomo. The Yam Shel Shlomo is bothered by this. Why? Because the Rambam tells us that the reason why you have to wait between meat and milk is because of basa v'ena shinayim. It doesn't seem to be, in the Rambam's frame of reference, any other reason why you would wait 6 hours, which is Rambam Shita, between meat and cheese. Now, Rav Acha, on the one hand, accepted Rav Chisda. He didn't come out against Rav Chisda and say, well, why can't I eat cheese immediately after meat? He understood that was the halacha, and there was some rationale behind that halacha. Well, what rationale did he have if not for basa v'ena shinayim? The Rambam doesn't offer us another option as to why you can't eat gvina immediately after basa. The only option he offers us is basa v'ena shinayim. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Rav Acha doesn't understand what's the status of basa v'ena shinayim. So we gave a number of answers to this yesterday, and today we want to add a new answer. And this is the Lev Aryeh. The Lev Aryeh says the following, that Rav Acha understood that there was a problem with basa v'ena shinayim, but he was confused as to how to solve that problem of basa v'ena shinayim. That's really what he was asking. Is it necessary to wait a certain period of time, or is it sufficient if he gets rid of the basa v'ena shinayim without even waiting? And then Afkamina is going to be Kinua Chapeh. And here's where Rav Acha vacillated back and forth. Is it enough that he removed the basa v'ena shinayim by doing Kinua Chapeh? Or is there some sort of separate halacha that he must wait, and according to the Rambam again, 6 hours, we'll see other shita soon, between basar and cholav? So that according to this approach of the Lev Aryeh, the Gemara's answer, this is actually Rav Chisda's answer, by quoting the pasuk Basar Odu Bein HaShinayim, is that even after you do Kinua HaPeh, there's still Basar Bein HaShinayim. The Kinua HaPeh could remove most of the Basar, but it won't remove all the Basar. And therefore, since Kinuach is not totally reliable, we're going to need a Shehia to wait 6 hours.
Wait, so what Rav Acha's asking is, after do Kinua HaPeh, what's left? Is that still something to worry about?
Correct. And okay, that's what he quoted the pasuk, Odenu, the emphasis on the word Odenu here, that there still is basa v'ena shinayim. So don't rely on kinuach alone. Now we go on to another interpretation, and that is the Teferes Yaakov. We're familiar with the Teferes Yaakov. We quoted him on many occasions. He says the following, this is a pretty breakthrough shita, that even the Rambam agrees that there's another reason why you can't eat gvina immediately after basar, and that is because of the tam befiv, because there's a tam, as Rashi says, Debasar motzi shuman v'nidbak b'marif b'tama. So the Rambam is well aware of that. Rationale for waiting after you eat basar.
Mm-hmm.
But the Rambam holds that if you only had the time of Rashi, of Marech Betamo, then you would not have to wait 6 hours. The reason why you have to wait 6 hours is for another reason. And this is really what Rav Acha Bar Yaakov was asking Rav Chisda. Is there another reason in addition to Tam Basar Befiv or Tam Basar Shemarech Betamo for waiting before you eat Gvina, for postponing the eating of Gvina? Is there an additional reason of Basar Bein Hashinayim? Why? Because if you only have one reason, which is called Tam Marech Betamo, then there's no need to wait a full 6 hours. The Tiferes Yaakov claims that from Rashi's perspective, we would not have to wait a full 6 hours. Exactly how long we'll have to wait for that, we'll have to wait till we get an answer to that question. Could be 1 hour is enough. We'll see about that. But 6 hours is unnecessary. That's where Rav Acha vacillated back and forth. Is there another reason which, in a sense, replaces the first reason because it extends way beyond Yesh B'chal Masayim Mona, that in addition to the problem of Tam, he has a problem of Basar Bein Hashinayim? And the nafkamina is going to be that he's going to have to wait a full 6 hours. That's where Rav Chisda answered him, according to the Rambam Shita, that there's another problem besides Tam, and that's Basar Bein Hashinayim. Okay, now we have a tremendous machlokas Rishonim about the Gemara's answer, Rav Chisda's answer, Basar Bein Hashinayim is still considered Basar. According to one school of thought, we'll mention some of the names of the Rishonim that are attached to the school of thought, the Basar Bein Hashinayim halacha only applies within a period of 6 hours. After the 6 hours, there's no longer Basar Bein Hashinayim. The Tur quotes this as the Rambam Shita, and it also appears in other Sfarim, like the Rashba, the Sefer Batim, the Archas Chaim. A lot of Rishonim, a whole school of Rishonim say that Basar Bein Hashinayim is only considered Basar within the 6 hour period. After the 6 hour period, any trapped meat between your teeth is already disintegrated. Now we have a second Shita, and that Shita is the Smak and the Yisur V'Het and the Archas Chaim in the name of the Itur and others. They all say that even after 6 hours there's still a problem of Basar Bein Hashinayim. So in any event, he has to clean out his teeth even after he waits 6 hours. We're not going to assume that Al Pidin, the status of Basar is gone because of the 6 hours that the disintegration. We're going to need to get rid of the Basar Bein Hashinayim. However, you don't have to assume you have Basar Bein Hashinayim, but if he knows about Basar Bein Hashinayim, then he has to repeat it.
Okay.
Then he has to get rid of it. Now, yesterday I mentioned to you a Yam Shel Shlom which made no sense. I tried to figure it out. I still have no clue. I'll just very quickly mention the words that he says. He claims that the Chiddush of the Gemara Basar Bein Hashinayim is to tell you that even immediately after you finish eating your meat, the Basar Bein Hashinayim is considered Basar. How much more so, it goes without saying, that Basar Bein Hashinayim after that period of time of Lialter, whatever that is, Lialter means immediately, is also for sure considered Basar Bein Hashinayim. The Chiddush is that Odenu Bein Hashinayim, that even though he just finished his meal and the meat is fresh, still it's considered Basar. And we ask the obvious question, if there's any Chiddush here, tell me about a Chiddush of Liachar's man after time periods go on. So I don't know how to make any sense out of this Yam Shel Shlom. Okay.
Is it possible there was a misprint?
Anything's possible, but you know, I try not to present that just because I don't understand something. It's always, that's what they say about the father was walking with his young son in London, and they passed the Big Ben. So the son asked his father, why is it so high up? Why do we need a clock that's so high up? So the father explained that if the Big Ben would be low down, every person would look at his watch and see, oh, Big Ben is off by a minute, and everybody would change the clock. So the easiest thing is, when you don't understand something, just say the text is incorrect. Just play with the dial. Okay, now There's another machlokus rishonim about Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva says that he's going to wait till another Seuda. According to one school of thought, this halacha of Mar Ukva is nothing more than a midas chasidus. It's not nikra din. It's not according to the strict letter of the law. And the one who champions this approach is Rabbeinu Tam, because according to that shita, it would have been enough simply to rely on kinuach hapeh. In other words, strictly according to the law, the problem of Basar ben Yishanan could be resolved by kinuach hapeh.
Wait, so it's not only Mar Ukva's father that's just Midat Chasidu, it's Mar Ukva himself.
Right. Yesterday we had a long discussion about Mar Ukva's father, but as far as Mar Ukva himself was concerned, here's the Chiddush of Rabbeinu Tam, mm-hmm. that there was no need to wait the full 6 hours. And that was the Chumrah of Midas Chasidus of Mar Ukva. And he brings a whole bunch of shitos that agree with Rabbeinu Tam, and they hold that the only... So the other version of the same approach, this is just a different version, but it's the same idea, is that the reason Mar Ukva waited from one suda to the other is because he didn't do kinuach hapeh. Had he done kinuach hapeh, he wouldn't have had to wait.
Mm.
But so it wasn't a midas chasidus, it was mikra din, because the din is that you have two choices. Either you do kinuach hapeh very thoroughly, and you probably have to wash out your mouth as well, or alternatively, you wait 6 hours. So if you're not implementing a proper, reliable netila and kinuach hapeh, then you have to wait 6 hours. The Rashba wants to prove that Mar Ukva was mi'ikar adin, that he wasn't just adding a midas chasidus here by waiting for another suda. And his proof is from the fact that he called himself Chometz ben Yayin. If the whole deal of waiting between meat and milk is a certain period of time is all midas chasidus, he wouldn't have called himself vinegar. You know, that means that he was being a little bit pejorative about it, and he didn't achieve that level of waiting a full 24 hours. He was only a chometz, and he would only wait 6 hours. Okay. Now, what is Suda Achrita? Here we have five shitas in Rishon. Five shitas. The Rambam shita is that it means waiting 6 hours. Tosis and Dagos Oshri, in the name of the Bahag, they hold you don't even have to wait for a time period for Suda Achrita. All you need is to terminate the Suda, which means that you masalik the Shulchan, and you recite Pirkas HaMazon, you can eat Gvina immediately thereafter. The third sheet is the Me'iri. The Me'iri Shita is that although it would seem that you have to wait 6 hours, because if you don't wait 6 hours, then it would depend on every individual how long it takes him until he eats the next Seuda, and that's called Lo Nitna Tavarecha L'Shiurim. We don't want a relative shiur. We want something standard and uniform. But, says the Meir, that's only with regard to basar. If he ate meat, then, in order to avoid the violation of this principle, Nasata L'Refa Shiurim, we set up a shiur of 6 hours. In that sense, the Meir accepts the Rambam. However, if he ate chicken, then the Me'iri suggests that all he has to do is terminate his Suda and start another Suda. Now, the reason for that, says the Me'iri, not the way I thought he was going to say, because Oph is only the Rabbonah, is because Oph is Kal Lihis Akel. In other words, it gets digested very quickly, or relative to meat, very quickly, and therefore it loses its shame basa. So all you have to do is end your seuda to make a hefsek and start a new seuda. That's in the case of Oph. As far as basa is concerned, the Me'iri adopts the shita Rambam, hook, line, and sinker. You have to wait a full 6 hours. Now we have a fourth shita, and that's Rabbeinu Yerucham. His opinion is that you have to wait 3 hours. And the Chayodim says that there are those who rely on Rabbeinu Yerucham and they wait 3 hours. In other words, it would seem that a person who wants to begin his digestion and immediately thereafter start a new suda, he would wait a minimum of 3 hours. And finally, we have the fifth shita, which is the Shari Dura, the Sevehet and the Maril. They hold that all you have to do is wait 1 hour, and you need Birkas HaMazon. Now, this is very strange, because if they're relying on the sheet of Tosus, that the Suda Prita means just end the first Suda and immediately start the second Suda, and you end the first Suda with Birkas HaMazon, why does it require waiting 1 hour? And the Ramah writes, V'cheda Minag Poshut, that the Minag has accepted this opinion, that you wait 1 hour. And if I'm not mistaken, that's what the Dutch do. The Germans, I think, wait 3 hours.
Wait, so in other words, in the Ramah's time, 1 hour was the common minhag?
Correct. Although the Ramah himself doesn't advocate that minhag, but he says that's the minhag that was widespread.
Uh-huh.
Now, where does this 1 hour come from? Again, it's like a sore thumb. Is he waiting 3 hours? Is he waiting from one Suda to the other? You know, 1 hour is not from one Suda to another. No one would start a new Suda after an hour under normal conditions. And not only that, he's requiring Birkas HaMazon, which sounds like he's going with the Sheet of Tosus, just end your Suda. So the Vilna Gaon claims that, believe it or not, this Sheet is based on a Zohar. The only problem is that this Zohar seems to indicate that you wait this hour in both directions, meaning whether you ate meat first and then you want to eat cheese, or whether you ate cheese first and then you want to eat meat. In both cases, you wait 1 hour. And there's a long presentation of the Chidah. The Chidah Azulai wrote many Sfarim, one of which is called the Birkei Yosef. And in his Birkei Yosef, he has doubts about this whole thing. He doesn't think that's what the Zohar meant. And if the Zohar did mean it, then we're going to have to require waiting an hour after Gvina before we eat Basar. We don't see that in any of the poskim. So there are a number of suggestions here as to what this shita, we call the Shari Dura, of waiting 1 hour is all about. One explanation is that all you need is a heker. A heker means it's not enough that you benched, because not everyone knows that you benched. You have to do something that's kind of obvious, that you're setting up a new seuda. And you may have said, well, just walk around the block, maybe wait 20 minutes, 18 minutes, you know, you could have come up with all sorts of different shitos. But lo nitnu dvarecha l'shi'urim, the Maril says that we wanted to find one definition that would be uniform, that would be accepted, a standard definition for everyone, to have this heker that it looks like you're ending one suit and starting another, and they settled on 1 hour. The Prima Gadin has another approach. And he says that basically the Shari Dura accepted the Shita Satosus, and all you have to do is end your Seuda. However, the Tosus requires, and this is not explicit in our Tosus, that's this Tosus L'Suda Achrita. Now, he doesn't say anything about Kinuach here in this Tosus, but the Prima Gadin claims that the Tosus is not satisfied simply with with benching and then starting a new Suda, but rather he requires Kinuach and Adocha Saper. And the Chiddush of the Shari Dura is that if you wait 1 hour, that could replace the requirement of Kinuach HaPeh. Why? Because after an hour, there's not much left in your mouth. Now we have a third approach to understand this 1 hour Shita. All this I'm addressing to my Dutch friends. They wait 1 hour. And that Shita is...
My brother-in-law is Dutch.
Is Dutch? Is he from Amsterdam or...?
No, his parents are Amsterdam. His father is from Holland. And they keep on that tradition.
Yeah. So, what's the third approach?
Is that mentioned in Shulchan Aruch at all?
No. As far as I know, it's not. It's mentioned in the Shari Dura, the Sevehet, the Maril. I don't know, and of course the Gaon mentions it.
Maru is a big.
Oh, just one second. What are we talking about now? I made a big mistake. We're not talking about 3 hours. We're talking about 1 hour. Oh, I'm sorry, sorry. So whatever I just said to you, I mean, I didn't say anything that was wrong, except for the fact that I told you it's not mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. That is true. If you're talking about Rav Yosef Cairo, it's not mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, but the Rambam mentions it. And the Rambam mentions, this is what we said before, that Kena Mir Poshut, that's the simple minhag to wait 1 hour. So it's interesting that the Rambam, who's in Poland, is, again, he himself doesn't accept this minhag, but he says that was the minhag that he was familiar with, to wait 1 hour, which is interesting because we know today is the Dutch minhag, but it seems like it was quite a widespread minhag back in the day in Poland as well. But what I was really excited about was the third explanation for this 1 hour. Again, the first explanation is that you want to make a heker, that it's another suda. The second explanation was that you want to substitute an hour for kinuach v'adochas haper. The third explanation I thought was very fascinating, and that's called a shiur ikul. Now, this concept of a shiur ikul means how long does it take for your food to digest, is a concept that's borrowed from Pirkas HaMazon. The halacha is that if you didn't bench immediately after your meal, if you waited a certain period of time, which is called a shiur ikul, then you can no longer bench. I mean, that's really a doraisa halacha. However, the shiur ikul is sha'a v'chomesh, what we call 72 minutes. So this is a little bit odd, because now we're waiting after the eating of meat 1 hour, which is only 60 minutes. In any event, I guess what they did was they rounded it off, and we're not dealing with the doraisa here of Pirkas HaMazon because he benched on time, but rather we're dealing with some sort of a hefsek between one suda, a meat meal, and another suda, milk meal, and therefore they settled it. The dust settled on 1 hour.
Just one more line.
He says, "Nafkamina she'achakach eno yochel levarach Pirkas HaMazon kinikosav." So he's saying the following. This is another piece of the puzzle. Then he's saying that it's not enough to wait 1 hour according to this shita. No, it means that first you have to do silek hashulchan, then you have to bench Pirkas HaMazon. By the time you finish with that, now you wait an hour, you'll have the shiur ikul.
When we talk about an hour, both in terms of waiting between meat and milk, and both in terms of benching, are we talking about a fixed 60 minutes or shalot zmaniot, or is that a focus?
Yeah, I didn't have enough time. He has a whole section here on whether 6 hours means six standard hours of 60 minutes or it's shalot zmaniot. The one who actually took the bull by the horn and analyzed this at great length is the Knesset HaGdol. The Knesset HaGdol, his name was Ben Venisti, lived almost 500 years ago, 400 and some odd years ago, and he has a whole discussion here quoting the name of every sefer I've ever heard of, basically. Okay. It just goes on and on.
And one last thing. In halakhic discussion, what's the term for, say, an hour that's 60 minutes?
Sha'a.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, now, according to the opinion that we wait 1 hour, does that mean without kinuach and hadocha? Remember before we said that according to one approach, the hour is to replace the requirement of kinuach hadocha. However, the Issa Veheter, who's one of the main Bali Ashita that says you wait 1 hour, he writes, the Shach quotes him, that you need kinuach and adocha plus 1 hour, and the Taz says that that's the way we should be machmir. It's not enough to wait 1 hour, but we need kinuach and hadocha. So John, next time you ask ask him if he does kinuach hadocha.
Sure,
he has other shittas. I just want to mention that there are other shittas.
Send him an SMS right now.
Yeah, no. Now, I'm going to make a note as to where we got to here, and then I'm really fast forwarding. There's a lot more on this question of waiting 6 hours, the pages and pages. I I don't want to take upon myself any sort of vow or pledge that we'll do those pages, but I'm hoping that maybe we will. But at this time, we're going to take a look at the Mishnah again on Daf Kuv Zayin on the Beis, so that we can sort of project ourselves a little bit further. And we're talking about Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, which is the second line in the Mishnah. And he allows two achsanoim to eat at the same table. One is eating basa, one is eating gvina. And the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanan bar Ami, Amar Shmuel lo shanu el she'en makirim zedzeh. Makirim zedzeh osu. So we're talking about two achsanoim. They don't know each other. They happen to be at the same hotel and they're eating at the same table. And that's called Ein Makirin Zedzeh. So I want to present to you a machlokas here between the Shach and the Prima Gadol. The question is, what does the word Makirin mean? According to the Shach, Makirin means Reus. Reus means a very close friendship. How do you gauge a close friendship in this particular context? I'm not telling you that this is a universal halacha in what is considered reus. He says anyone who would eat from his friend's plate without any embarrassment. Again, in our day, this is a different sociology here, but you know, they probably didn't have all the sophisticated kind of silverware and plates and. So, I wouldn't stick my hand into your plate if I didn't know you well enough. And I have to know you well enough that I can assume you wouldn't mind if I ate from your plate. And again, if you take the Shach and apply it in our time, you know, in what year are we up to? 2020 almost?
Almost.
Okay. So then the whole halacha of my Kirin Zetz, I think, goes down the tubes. Maybe a husband and a wife, maybe, I don't know, but beyond that,
I would think maybe even then they would ask each other first.
Maybe two brothers, I don't know, but it's very, very rare that you would have a Makirin Zetzeh She'ochel Echad Michavero V'eno Mizbayesh. The Prima Gadim, on the other hand, says, no, Afilu Eilehem Reus, even if they don't have Reus, is Afilu Hachi Chayshinan, once they are familiar one with the other, then according to Prima Gadim, they know each other. It's not like they met for the first time at this inn on the table in the Charocha. Is then it's also. So Makirim, he takes the word Makirim literally, because it doesn't say Reim or anything like that. It says Makirim Zetz. And according to Prima Gadim, even that there's no Reus between them, nevertheless, we're still Choshesh. And the question according to the Prima Gadim is going to be, what does the Gemara mean, V'yochal kol echad mechavero? I mean, according to the Prima Gadim, just because I know someone, therefore I'm going to eat off his plate. That's very difficult. Now, even within the Prima Gadim, we're not exactly sure. Did the Prima Gadim mean Al-Pidin, that according to the strict letter of the law, if you know each other, then you can't eat bossing mina from the same? Or Kamenosa Lahachmir, he was just throwing out a chumra over here, a kind of a, like a low plug kind of halacha. The afal gav the enam reim, even though they're not reim, but they might not be embarrassed to eat one from the other's plate. And that's already enough to be considered makir. But that was only a chumra. So we're not sure whether the Prima Gadim really meant this, you know, me'ikar adin, or is just a chumra. Now he writes here the name of a sefer called Vayikra Yoshua. Again, I'm not familiar with the sefer. He says, the af im mizbayish betivo lecho mimenu, but nevertheless, im makirim zedzeh osu, the chayshin shem mitoch ava sheyesh b'neim yitein echad lechavera. So I just want to point out here, I mean, there's a lot to talk about here in this sefer called Vayikra Yoshua. I don't have the sefer, but I have just this quote. But one major point here, so it's like a breakthrough, is that he's saying, it doesn't mean that I'm going to put my hand into your plate and take your plate. take your food off your plate. I mean, again, if that's the pshat in the Prima Gadim, that we know each other, and then I'm going to take something out of your plate, that's a wild chashash. But rather, he says, that since there's a relationship between the two, one person might give something from his plate to his friend. And that puts the whole sugya, if you ask me, into a different perspective. For example, friends go out to eat in a restaurant. Very often, what happens is, they say, well, you order the schnitzel, and I'll order the steak and the entrecote, and we'll split it. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Or hey, this tastes really good. Take a piece from my plate. You know what I mean? That's already a friendship, which I think even in our time, that puts a whole other spin on it. Now here I want to share with you Rabbi Kiva Eger. Rabbi Kiva Eger, who writes his comments on the Gilyon, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, in this case we're talking about Yoredeya Siman Peches, he quotes a sefer called the Gan HaMelech, who says that two people that whatever Makirin says that means, but whatever it is, and he's eating Gvina and he's eating Basar, it would not be meaningful. In other words, the halacha would not change or be flexible, even if they would appoint a shomer, a third party, to supervise. Now, the halacha is with regard to Or HaNer on Shabbos, meaning if I light a candle on Shabbos, so technically I'm not allowed to read to the Or HaNer. We're talking about the Or HaNer, not. We're not talking about bulbs, you know, the way we do it today, but back in the day, what they had was that if, let's say, the oil was not dripping properly into the receptacle and the light was flickering, you would almost instinctively tip the oil and get more oil into the receptacle, which is a malacha of Mavir, one of the 39 malachas on Shabbos. And there the Gemara says that if you appoint a shomer, someone who will supervise you, then that's sufficient. And the question here of the Kivega asks on the Gan HaMelech is, why is it that a shomer should not work in the case of Basar Cholov, and yet elsewhere we see that a shomer works? He says, Kevan Sheshmira Zos Tzricha Lios Tidiris Below Hefseg Lo Efsha. We're not going to rely on a mashgiach, so to speak, because it would have to be every single moment till both of them, you know, finish their meal. I mean, below hefsek. He says, Lo dami lukori lior aner, da hasam eno el chashash bi'almo, shem yiche or aner. He says, first you have to assume that maybe the or aner will not be steady because the oil is not dripping in. And then you have to assume that once the R is diminished, he will then stretch his hand out in order to pour the oil into the receptacle. That's already two stage removed, and here a mashgiach works. But in the case of Basar V'Cholov, we're not going to rely on a mashgiach because we need what we call a mashgiach tmidi. Now, the Kaf HaChaim, who was, of course, one of the final decisors for the Sefaradim. He's like the Mishnah Berurah for the Sefaradim. He agrees to this Rabbi Kiva Eger, and he's not excited about Mashgiach. However, there are poskim, both amongst Ashkenazim and amongst Sefaradim, who do accept the concept of a Mashgiach. On the Ashkenazi side, you have the Lev Aryeh. On the Sefaradi side, you have the Ben Yehoyada. And they write Mahani Lahamid Shomer. As long as you set up a person to watch, to supervise, that is fine. Kidil Kaimalon Le'inyan Kriyal Oraner. They accept an analogy to the case of reading on Shabbos to the light of the candle. And just like in the case of reading to an Or candle, the Mashgiach is enough, so too here with regard to eating meat and milk. This guy is eating meat, this guy is eating milk, we can rely on a Mashgiach. Now here we have a major machlokas haposkim about something called hekera. What does that mean? In the laws of Nida, if a husband and wife are eating at the same time from the same table, and she's a Nida, then they set up a heker. They put something on the table between them to remind themselves. What about in this case where he's eating meat and his friend, his buddy, is eating milk? So here's a gigantic machlokes haposkin. Ha'im mahani heker or diva lo mahani heker kla. Now, there are basically a number of different variables here. One of the variables, which is the sugi that we're about to learn, we didn't get up to it yet, but we're managed up to this sugi, which is called tfisa achas, which means that if you have two individuals that are financially interdependent, right, they have the same bank account, then we become much more machmir with regard to basar and chol, meaning he's eating meat and he's eating milk. So it goes like this. Some poskim say that a heker always works. Some poskim say that heker never works. And some poskim say that it wouldn't work in the case of tfisa achas, which is called b'nei hotza achat. But it would work if there were two familiar friends eating at the same table, but they were not partners in any sense financially. They were not interdependent. They didn't have hotza achas. And then heker would work. The later poskim, now, la'alocha, first of all, the Shulchan Aruch poskims that heker works. And the Shulchan Aruch doesn't make any ifs, ands, or buts about it. He doesn't limit it. But the later poskim say that even though the Shulchan Aruch allows heker, royal bal nefesh lahachmir al atzma. I don't know if you're familiar with that phrase. It appears left, right, and center in the poskim that sometimes when there's a machlokes and we rely on a more lenient shita, the poskim will add a postscript that if you want to be a bal nefesh, you want to be a very strict person, you're worried about what might could possibly happen, you know, you suffer from anxiety attacks, then you should not rely on a heker. However, the Mishkanos Yaakov, I think his name was Reisher, if I'm not mistaken, anyway, he writes that we're going to make the following distinction. That we might be more machmir, again, even though mikra din, you don't have to be machmir, in the case of basar. So you're eating meat, and I'm eating cheese. But if you're eating chicken, and I'm eating cheese, ein makom lahachmir klal. There's no room for any chumra whatsoever. So if somebody is eating chicken, and he's eating milfis, and they put up a heker between the two, and then they say, well, we're not going to rely on the heker, and we simply won't eat off the same table, then if it's oaf and gvina, ein makom lahachmir. This touches on what we discussed yesterday, that on certain occasions, you know, when you go beyond the letter of the law, if the law is very clear, lakula, then ein makom lahachmir. There's no room for kula. We gave the mashal of sitting in the sukkah when it's raining. The Shulchan Aruch writes the following. Hadi asola loso, the iser of putting both milk and meat on the same time, that he's eating meat and he's eating milk, da'aka b'shnei b'nei odom ha-makirim zedzeh, only if they know each other. So there's a whole school of achronim here. It goes from early achronim all the way down to the Chochmas Adam. They write, lav da'aka shnei b'nei odom, even though the Shulchan Aruch speaks about a case where there are two different people eating off the same table, Gam bi adam echad, even if he's eating alone, asur lahalos, he's not allowed to put on the table the fleshiks and the milchiks, even though his intention is only to eat one of them. And then you'll ask, according to these poskim, why did the Shulchan Aruch mention that there are two people eating at the table? The same halach applies to one person. Yesh lama d'l'rabusa ka'amar, a separate chiddush. You would have thought that if Shnei B'nei Adam, it's mutter. Why? Because you're eating your milchiks, I'm eating my fleshiks, we're not sharing the two. And the answer is no, since we're makirim zed, so we might share one with the other. But certainly in a case where he's eating alone, and he intends to eat the meat, and all of a sudden he forgets himself and eats the cheese, that for sure is awesome. And that's basically the Isra Allah that we've been discussing from the beginning of this parak. Now what happens if I'm eating whatever and he is eating the other gender and he's not Jewish? Is this halacha only applicable to two Jewish people eating at the same table, or gam b'Yisrael v'goy? And once again we have three shitos. Today the magic number seems to be three. The placey, that's Rav Yonasan Ivashitz, he writes that in the case of a Jew and a guy, even if they know each other, it's mutter. In other words, there's always a kpeda here. You know, the guy is not going to give you, you're not going to give the guy. He says the following. However, if they are very, very close buddies, Ovim said, then he says it's us, even according to the place. So the place, he would basically say that the general rule, I guess in 9 out of 10 cases, well maybe 99 out of 100, is that there's a certain distance, even between friends, in the case of a Jew and a non-Jew. That close they don't get. But Lu Yitzu, if you had a situation where they're mamish Ovim said, you know, in the post-World War II period, it's hard to imagine Ovim Zetzeh, but let's say there is such a thing as Ovim Zetzeh. In America, you have Ovim Zetzeh, but usually those are assimilated Jews. But let's say if you have a religious Jew and he's Ovim, he has an Ava relation with a non-Jew, then even Rabbi Yonasan Ivishus would agree that the Iser applies.
You know, I want to put it on how good the relationship is, but of course I'm not taking it. Nothing he's eating is kosher.
Well, I guess they're eating in a kosher restaurant. You know, it's a business agreement. They used to have Prime Grill in New York. I heard it moved to the Sony building.
Well, I guess they wouldn't have meat and cheese at that restaurant. In the kosher restaurant, usually they have both.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah.
But maybe there are a hotel or something.
Right, you know? Yeah. There are situations where you could have meat and milk. Yeah, but everything's kosher. Now he has a second shita, which is the Yad Yehuda. A very important posek. I have a copy of it at home on Yerideya, and he writes that this halacha makes no distinction between a guy and a Jew and a Jew and a Jew. In both cases, after Yisrael guy, Yisrael chal, if they know each other, then there's an Yisrael. And the Chachmas Adam seems to have accepted this sheet. The third sheet is called the pre-toar, very often quoted in Yerideya, and he says the following, Yesh lachal. We make the following distinction. Hello lifnei ha'akum machal shehuva mi beis akum. If the akum is bringing food from his own house, then we don't have to worry that the Jew might be tempted to eat whatever in the akum's place, maybe because of kashrus, right? However, if the food is being taken from a beis Yisrael, and the food that's being prepared in the Beis Yisrael is presented to the Akum, then he says it's us. Okay, now what about two brothers? Let's see the next piece of Gemara. The Gemara says the following: Amalei Rav Yemar Bar Shlemel Abai, with three lines up before the end of Kuf Zayin Amid Beis. Shnei Achim Umakpidim Zel Zemach. Here's a little bit of a sad story. You know, you're talking about two brothers, which would be the classic case of Makirim Zedzeh, and even Reus and Ava, but in this case they are makbid one on the other. Maybe they had some sort of fallout, I don't know, but there's a certain kapeda.
Maybe they were just taught it wasn't proper manners.
Well, that's what we discussed before you came in here, but okay, fine. Because we mentioned that some poskim say that it's not a question of manners, it's a question of would I want to give you a taste of what's on my plate. So that could be good manners.
If they're brought up from a young age being told that's not allowed, then
not because of hygienic reasons, maybe because of halachic reasons. They were told that you shouldn't.
The word just, it's not proper. If you've been at somebody's house where, you know, you see the kids are very, you know, no elbows on the table,
I see what you mean. But you know, it's really quite common. That's what we try to point out, even in our contemporary life, that people share from their plate. You know, I want you to taste something that I am. I'm being very magnanimous. They brought me out this great dish, and you know, maybe next time you come to us, so you'll want to order this dish. Okay. Now, Amalei. So what was the response? I forgot the names. Who is it? Abai. Abai's response was Yomru kol asrikin asurin srike baitus mutarim. That whole line can be reduced to two words, and that is lo pluk. So what we're looking at is like a catchphrase or a secret code word for lo pluk. What are these srikim? Srikim are matzahs. that have shapes in them, artistic matzahs. I don't know if you've ever seen this. The closest thing that I've seen to that is like chocolate matzahs that have a little bit of an imprint on it. But back in the day, they used to have expert bakers who were also artists, and they were very creative. And what they would do is they would make shapes in the dough, and then they baked the dough, and the matzah came out with shapes on it. Beautiful, beautiful tziurim. And those matzahs were forbidden by the Chachamim, because the Chachamim were afraid that in the course of time, while they wait until they finish the artistic achievement on this dough, the dough will ferment, and they'll be eating chametz on Pesach. But what about Srike Baitus? The Baitus family were experts in creating a mold, but that's not the word I'm looking for. You know those things like the cookie cutters, you know what I'm talking about? They're made out of a certain shape and you just press it down. I'm going to call it a mold. I don't know. It's probably, if you look at Google, I'm sure you'll find a better word for it. So these guys from this bakery, this was instantaneous. There was no... They didn't have to go through the entire process of putting together the shape. All they did was put it down. So do you want to tell me that Chachamim will allow buying these artistic matzahs that have shapes on them if they came from the house of Baitus? No. The Gemara asks it as a rhetorical question. This is called lo plur. Why? Because today you're going to allow them to eat these matzahs, and then tomorrow you're going to tell them, well, but these matzahs you can't eat. I mean, what's the difference? I mean, they're both artistic matzahs. So basically what Abai was answering to Rav Yemar was that in the case of Achim, we have an absolute rule that they're not allowed to eat from the same tables, they're Basu, they're Gvina. We're not going to make distinctions, well, what is the relationship between these two brothers? You know, how close they are or how distant they are. So in the Shulchan Aruch, he paskins the following. Shnei b'nei odom ha-makirim zeh, afilu matpidim zel zeh, asurim. Now this is very interesting. If you read the Shulchan Aruch carefully, he slightly changes the Gemara. What do I mean to say? He doesn't say that if you have two brothers, afilu makpidim zel zeh asur, but he says afilu bnei adam shemakirim zeh zeh v'afal pi shemakpidim zel zeh asur. And the Amshel Shlomo, who was again more or less a contemporary of the Beis Yosef, maybe he was half a century later, he disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, no, dafka achim hamakpidim zed zeh osu. When do we make the lo plu? That's only the case of two brothers. Two brothers are the classic paradigm of makirim zed zeh, and there's an absolute iser where they're makpin one or the other, not makpin the other. Avol shar b'nei adam, with regard to other two people, we make this distinction, right? We said that if they happen to chance at the same hotel and they don't know each other from a hole in the wall, then it's muta. So we are making distinctions. And therefore, even if they're makirim zetzeh, we don't have to set up a lo plu that since they know each other, they're familiar with each other, it's automatically asur. Imei makpidim zal zeh shari. So in other words, when Rav Yemar asked this question, he was dafka asking his question about Shnei Achim with regard to other people, even though the Makirim Zed Zed, everything depends upon where the Makpinim Zed Zed. That's the Amshul Shlomo. But according to the Machaber and Shulchan Aruch, we're not going to make any distinctions about Makpinim Zed Zed. It all boils down to Makirim Zed Zed, and obviously in the case of Achim, that's Makirim Zed Zed, but even if it was Rechokim, meaning they're not Krovim, they're not related in any way, if they're Makirim Zetzeh, it's an automatic no-no, it's automatically Osir, even though the Makpidim Zetzeh. Now the language of the Tur, you know, the Tur came a few good 100 years before the Machaber, he seems to indicate that it all depends upon whether Achim and Makpidim Zetzeh. But the Beis Yosef, who wrote not only the Shulchan Aruch, but he also wrote a super commentary on the Tur, he writes that Loshon HaTur lav dafka, that you shouldn't take the Tur literally and assume that only in the case of Achim we're going to institute this lo plug. and we're going to prohibit it, even though they're not Fidim Zed. Said, no, it's not. This is not only by Achim. It's any Makirim Zed. So they're automatically included in this. Isa, we're not going to distinguish between Makpidim and Ein Makpidim. Now, the Knesset Gedolah, I told you before, his name is Ben Venisti. He was a little bit later, but also about four centuries ago. He says that when Rav Yemar asked his question to Abaye, and he mentioned Shnei Achim, that was L'Rabusa. The Achal Gav, the Achim Akpidim Mistoma, HaMakpidim Zel Zeb Mistoma Akpodi Gdola, V'lo Yavu Lechol, Samisa. You hear this?
Could you repeat that? I'm
sorry. That's like, no, it's saying that if you're talking about two brothers that are makpid one on the other, it means they have a very serious kapeda. They had a basic fallout. Unfortunately, we know this too often. I mean, Rosh Hashanah should spare us from this. My father used to always say that, just like when you go out on a journey, you have to get yourself a very good travel agent. And the first thing the travel agent is going to tell you is what not to take along on your trip. Because as you and I know, people schlep the whole kitchen sink, you know, and then nowadays maybe they're more makir because you pay $100 for everything you have. But in the old days, that was the best advice you could get from a travel agent is what not to take on your journey. So my father used to always give the marshal that when we embark on this new journey of was a tough Shin Pei, whatever we have to, right? This new journey of a new year, we need a good travel agent who's going to tell us what not to take along on this journey, and that's grudges, old grudges. That's what he used to say. But if you have two brothers that they're holding a grudge,
more so that's you. Even then you could argue that that's even more that's somebody who know people who know each other might be even more willing to than friends than their brothers.
Right. In other words, if you and I have a little bit of a fallout, I still might overlook it and give you some food. The finish of the Gemara is that even though it's a campaign as if there's a brick wall between them, we still ask it because of local.
Which is, but that would then explain why the Shulchan Aruch says.
Correct. That. He's trying to defend the Shulchan Aruch. The Knesset Gedolah is a Shulchan Aruch man. He's trying to say that even if I don't accept the Beis Yosef, the Torah didn't mean it, the Torah meant it, but the Torah is not correct. What was the Torah's point? The Gemara says it's Shnei Achim. You can't go beyond that. The Lo Plug only is in Shnei Achim. But if two people who are not Machpid, even though they know each other, then it's Mutter. We're not going to apply Lo Plug. Says the Kessler, that's not true. His whole diuk is based on the fact that the question was formulated in terms of Shnei Achim. Name! In the case of Shnei Bnei Adam, who aren't Achim, that goes without saying. For sure, it's got to be Osir. But in the case of Achim, where it's World War III between them, it's more than just a Cold War, then in that case, maybe you would think that that we don't have to be makpid at all, we don't have to worry at all that they'll eat one for the other. Kamash, well, no, even in this case, I'm going to fly low plume. But certainly in the case of Shnei Bnei Adam. Okay. Now, let's just see, how are we doing on the clock? We still have 10 minutes. I'm just wondering. I mean, there's a long sugi about low plug. I don't know if I'm ready for that now. The next Mishnah is what we want to start next week. I'm making a quick calculation. Well, you know what? Once we already started with the Moresh's Moshe, let's add another three paragraphs. Is that okay with the oil?
Sure.
Yeah, it's okay. Just because I see with the time period to go on to the next Mishnah is the most famous Mishnah in the Perek. That's called Tipas Chol. Yeah, now we know it as Tipat Chalav, mother child care. But the original Tipat Chalav is right here on Daf Kuf Ches. So he quotes the Taz. The Taz claims that since the reason for this Isur, even in the case of Makpidim Zed, says because of Lo Plug, then Lo Plug should apply even in the case of Shar Bnei Adam, who are Makirim Zed, and we're not going to differentiate whether they're Makpid or not Makpid. The Shach agrees with the Taz, that's a Chiddush, by the way, and he basically accepts the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, and we're going to apply this little plug even in the case of Shar B'nai Adam. Now he quotes the Minchas Yaakov, I think his name is Reicher, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, he says the following: Lo plug shayach kishayesh ruba kineged mi'uta. When do we apply lo plug? Only if you're trying to swallow up a minority situation, a relatively rare situation. Is asrina mi'uta atu ruba. We're afraid that if we allow you in the minority situation, you might come and violate it, even apply it even in the al kain therefore bi'achim. In the case of brothers, rubam eino makpidim. So the case of achim, this is the argument of Minchas Yaakov, that fits the structure or the methodology of lo plug. Why? Because most achim are not makpid, and if you can allow it in this case, then because they're makpid, then you might come to extend it even to the rov, to the normal case. Masha'en came b'shar b'nei adam. He says, in the case of Shabnam, Rubam Makpidim says that. Most people do not put their hand into his friend's plate. And if you're going to tell me that, just one second, that we're going to answer it in the case of Makirim, right? So then you're going from the rove to the mir. Just wait a second. Let me just see if I get the mathematics here. Again, in the case of achim, see, you're talking about rove, eino makpidim. So now we have lo plug because the minority is going to come. Yeah. But in the case of shar b'nei adam, there it's the rove of makpidim zetze. So now you're going to tell me that we're going to aser it in the case of makirim, even if it's makpidim. Do you hear what he's saying? He's saying that even though it's makirim, that doesn't set up a majority. You know, in the case of achim, the majority are makirim and eino makpid. So that's fine. I understand the iser. Now we're going to extend that iser even to the minority case of achim and makpidim. But in the case of shar b'nei adam, the exception to the rule of makpidim is the rare case of eino makpidim. Now you have a case of makirin, which is eino makpidim, and that goes back into the majority case of makpidim. Do you follow what he's saying? Now, it's, even though it's makirim, but it's makirim and makpidim, there's no reason that we should therefore set up an iser when in most cases it's makpidim. In the case of achim, it's eino makpidim. So there's more of a push in the case of achim to want to be machmir because achim in general is ein makpidim zetze. So there's really a chashash that he'll feed him and so forth and so on. But in the case of shar b'nei adam, where it's this only this rare occasion where they are so enamored with each other, their relationship is such that ein makpidim zetze, okay, that's going to be the exception to the rule. But if it's makirim v'eino makpidim, if it's makirim u'makpidim, then it falls back to the majority. Okay. Then he writes something else in the name of the Yamshel Shlomo. He says, Achim is different. The reason why the Torah only mentions Achim here in this Isur is because Be'etzer Mahusam Hei Makirim Zetzer. So that's a separate category of Achim because they, by definition, they're brothers that recognize each other. V'af al gav de befall Hei Makpidim Zetzer Eino Meshane Es Etzem Shmom. Right, the name is Achim, and the halacha formulated an isur with a low plug in the case of Achim. Masha'enke b'shar b'nei adam, we don't have this category of shar b'nei adam. We have shar b'nei adam makpidim zelzeh. We have shar b'nei adam that are not makpidim zelzeh. So that is a clear distinction between the two categories. Okay. Now he has a machlokes about what's called sonin zetzeh. Now, until now, we've been talking about makpidim zetzeh. You know, like Eric would say, etiquette. You know, I wouldn't, give you from my plate. But now we're talking about sonin. Now, the concept of sonim, again, this is way beyond my my ability at this moment to analyze, but the concept of sonim is a borrowed concept from Hilchus what? Anybody know? He doesn't mention it here, but it's from Hilchus Eidus. So the halacha is that if you have a sone, and the Gemara Makis is going to try to define what exactly constitutes a sone, then you cannot testify. A sone cannot testify against another sone. So the Rush writes that in a case of sonim, the halacha changes. For example, Shnayim hamudarim hana zemize. Kevin says sonim zet zemutarim. So who I did call shnayim says sonim zet zemutarim lechol. Just one second. What's the case of mudar hana? So I was mudar hana from chadveiro. Ah, wow. If I understand correctly, Reuven takes a ned that Shimon is not allowed to get any benefit from him. Now they're both eating at the same table. So the Rosh says that we're afraid that the one who's enjoined from eating from his friend might come to violate the neder and eat from his friend, unless there's sonim zetzah. And that's a sugya v'seth in the Dorim on Daf Mem Aleph. And the Rosh wants to apply that same sugya here, that even if you'll tell me that there's a low plug in the case of makpidim zetzah, but if we go one step beyond and we achieve, you know, all the requirements to set up a new category called sonim zetzah, then they would be allowed to eat one from the same table, both from the same table, and the paradigm for that is going to be mudar hana, where the Gemara says in the Dharm, since there's sonim zetzah, that's really the reason he took this neder. You know, he said, don't get any benefit because I hate your guts, you know. So in such a case, they're allowed to eat at the same table. Again, why they're eating at the same table is beyond me, but that's the mitzvah that he's referring to. So this engenders a whole long discussion, because when the Rashba quotes our sugya in his famous work called the Torah Sabayis, he writes afilu shnei achim hasonim zetzeh. He doesn't have the word makpidim zetzeh, he has the word sonim. He went out of his way lafuke to exclude the Rush, to argue against the Rush. And for some reason, in the Dorim, we don't apply a principle of low plug, and we are going to make a plug, and we're going to say in the case of sonim, they're allowed to eat at the same table, but not in bus of a cholov. Here, we apply the principle of low plug, even though they're sonim zetzeh. And that generates a whole long literature. Kasa Bishut Beis Yaakov, Achresha Ochal Basar, he finished his meat meal, and now he wants to sit at the same table with someone who's eating milchus. What would you say? I didn't read the punchline yet. I mean, what would you say intuitively? I would think it's also, I don't know. What do you think?
He's finished eating.
He finished eating, but he's eating with someone who's eating cheese.
But now it's the weight is the rabbanon that's, in other words, it's even further removed. So,
well, yes and no. In other words, is it that you're not allowed to eat off a table? Just one second. Maybe now he's not eating, right?
He finished eating.
Let me just read it to you. Apparently, this is a machlokes between the Beis Yaakov and the Kanfei Yonah. The Beis Yaakov says, "Asur l'sheves liad mishal chol gvina shemi yoshit lo v'yochal."
If he's got still got meat between his teeth, then it may be.
Well, whatever it is, he's not allowed to eat cheese, yeah. And now he's sitting on the table. He's not. He finished his meat meal. And his friend is eating cheese.
He's already said the bracha and clear off his table. Then there's a mandama that he
right, is. Right. We're only talking about a case where he's not allowed to eat cheese. You're right. That's a good point. The Kanfei Yonah says no. Dafka b'shas achila, while he's eating, chayshid and shema yochal gvina mechavera, that he'll eat his friend's cheese. V'loli achar achila. V'lo shamanu sha'osur. I think he's accusing the Beis Yaakov of saying that according to your logic, if he wants to cut cheese, you know, for whatever reason, he's preparing for the next meal, that should also be also. Maybe he'll pop a piece of cheese into his mouth. In other words, he can't just, you know, ad infinitum create new scenarios and new chashashas and prohibit them. The prohibition was v'shas achila, and he's no longer eating. V'chein kasa v'yad Yehuda, d'kedu pashin sagamor, d'dafka v'shas achila osu. Only while they're eating is it osu. Now he asks the following question. What about if he finished eating his meat, but he's still eating parva, like he's still eating the bread on the table, or let's say they serve him kompot? So he wants to claim that even the Kanfiyona, who yelled and screamed, how could you go beyond the letter of the law, would agree that in this case he's not allowed to sit and eat bread while his friend is eating cheese. So this would be a cool quiz question for someone who's taking a fayer for smicha. I would ask the following. In what circumstance, under what conditions, would it be awesome for you to eat bread at the same table as someone's eating cheese? And if I gave you that question on an exam, you'd tell me, rip it out. This is a mistake. How can it be possible that you can't eat bread while he's eating cheese? The answer is because you're still in the middle of a meal that was a meat meal. And you haven't completed your meal yet because you're still eating. The question is if you're eating. According to the first day of the Beis Yaakov, even if you're not eating, you're not allowed to be at the same table with him eating cheese. According to the second opinion, it's only within a suda, b'shas achila. But it could be that the shas achila is achila's lechem. He's already finished his meat. There's no longer meat on the table. All the meat was removed. And he's eating bread, but it's still considered shas achila. Okay, Rabosai, that's what we have for today. I hope you enjoyed it. There's a lot here. It just keeps going and going. And we'll see.
I'll put the
All right, so next week we have Sunday and Monday, and then we can negotiate Tuesday, right?